Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:06 PM, and that is Pacific Standard Time on December 2nd. Well, I thought we'd kick off today with gold, because it was up in a reasonably dynamic manner yesterday, but then it also followed through on the upside in here today. So it's up to $1,829, having been below $1,800 yesterday and the day before. It's also clearly bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average in a manner similar to what we had back in March, except not quite as dynamic. So there's still potential that it may yet move higher in a more dynamic manner. But one thing that I think is also important to realize is that a large number of the gold shares also pulled back in a dynamic manner over the course of the last while. Particularly since the peak in gold around the beginning of August. So, for example, when we look at Petroplavsk, which is has been one of the best performers among international gold miners over the course of the last year, it peaked in July, in fact, and then has been pulling back in a reasonably dynamic manner. Going from 40 to 25 is a significant decline. But the reality is, too, that that was exaggerated by the fact that there has been a great deal of corporate shenanigans going on with the company at the same time. Yet, as soon as gold started to demonstrate support, it found support in the region of the trend mean as well. Then, if we think about Agnico Eagle, which is one of the most admired of the gold miners in North America, because all of its production is in reasonably politically secure regions, it's also pulled back sharply but found support in the region of the trend mean, and that is a dynamic bounce also from the region of the upper side of the base formation. So we're starting to see that there has been a reticence to be interested in some of the gold miners, or indeed the silver miners for that matter. Fresnillo, for example, has been also pulling back to the region of its trend mean and has rebounded reasonably impressively over the last couple of days. These, of course, are all reasonably large companies. Then, if we look at some of the smaller companies like Great Bear, well, Great Bear is one of the best marketers of the small companies out there. Every time they come through with drill results, they post them. It also serves to highlight the fact that they've got pretty rich resources that they're drilling right now. So it's also been among the best performers in the gold mining sector over the last 2 years, and it's been consolidating now for most of the last 6 months. Then, if we think about some of the bigger or more promising mining sectors in Australia, well, Northern Star Resources is certainly one of those. They've just gone through a merger, and the share has dropped back down to test the lower side of the range. Now, one limiting factor for the Australian miners is the strength of the Australian dollar. Australian gold miners had done really spectacularly well in the early part of this recovery. So off the highs in 2016, we saw a number of Australian miners, both large and small, Newcrest, of course, being among the larger companies, they pushed on to new highs after the peak in 2016. And part of the reason for that was because of the weakness of the Australian dollar. So they were able to sell their production in US dollars, and their production was in Australian dollars, and they were able to keep the margin. But the Australian dollar has turned the corner, and it now looks like it's on a clear recovery trajectory. It pushed on to a new closing high in here today. It's clearly demonstrated support in the region of the trend mean, and it's been an awfully long downtrend, coming down from a peak in 2011 at 110, down to lows around 55 cents. So, in other words, it halved versus the US dollar. and now we're back on a recovery trajectory. So there is certainly the potential that the Australian dollar is going to do better, and that that will act as something of a headwind for some of its domestic companies. And we did see a something of that kind of phenomenon in the run-up to the peaks in 2011 for gold, because when we look at gold in Australian dollars, then it has been rising, but it has clearly broken below the trend mean. It hasn't clearly demonstrated support in the region of the trend mean in the same way that gold has in US dollars. And the strength of the Aussie dollar is certainly part of the reason for that. So obviously then the strength of the Australian dollar could contribute to the to gold not performing quite as well as it has or is likely to do in US dollar terms, because the US dollar is under pressure. When we look at the dollar index, this is a clear downward break. The euro is breaking out against the US dollar, and it followed through on the upside in here today. And this looks like a clear breakout. It's quite dynamic in nature, and it's been a reasonably orderly consolidation below the 120 area, which was a psychological area of resistance back in 2017 and 18 as well. It's looking likely that the dollar is going to continue lower from here. That's positive for gold overall. Bond yields were higher again in here today, up to 93 basis points. I've been continually talking about the potential for yield curve control, that we're moving into a period of financial repression. And at the very minimum, it's similar to the kinds of conditions that we saw at the beginning of this century, when there was a clear determination to try and hold interest rates down for a prolonged period of time in order to really spur the recovery off of the burst technology and telecoms and media bubble. And then in the aftermath of 9/11, so there was a real and a clear rationale for why interest rates should be held down. And that, of course, created this fear about financial repression, that inflationary pressures were about to take hold. When we think about swap spreads, well, the 10-year swap spread is in the region of about 93 basis points as well. It does look like it's pushing higher from here. When we think about what exactly we're likely to see in terms of inflationary pressures overall, well, eventually it is likely that we're going to start to see demand for wage increases start to pick up. I think there is that is pretty much baked in the cake, that as people look at what they've received in terms of financial supports this year, well, they're going to see a significant drop when they've become used to they've been used to earning more from unemployment benefits than they have from working. So that's obviously a real potential problem in terms of getting people back to work. Then when we think about the US dollar inflation swap, that's up to 2.29%. So we have a market-driven measure of inflation, which is up to 2.25%. We have the bond yield at about 93 basis points. So we already have financial repression. Now, either bond yields are going to play significant catch-up, and we're going to see them move up to over 2%, or we're going to see clear measures underway to try and arrest the potential for yields to rise. And if we do see yield curve control measures introduced, well, the rise in yields that we're starting to see right now is obviously then going to be a potential catalyst for to bring forward that decision. They may wait to see exactly what happens in terms of the stock market, but there is a clear rationale for why gold should be doing better, because the only possible way that governments are going to come even close to paying back the massive quantities of debt taken on this year is through inflation. They will obviously try to grow their way out, and reflationary forces are likely to be very significant next year. The savings rate has increased substantially, and banks have been accumulating deposits. Well, they're accumulating deposits for a simple reason, because they're worried about what happens when the moratorium on foreclosures or collecting on delinquencies expires at the end of this year. But a rising yield curve spread is certainly beneficial for the banking sector. It's probably even more beneficial for mortgage REITs, and those are highly levered instruments. But the fact that banks are doing well is also very supportive of the recovery scenario overall. The clearest sign of a reasonably healthy financial sector, which is demonstrably positive for the economy, is a healthy banking sector. The USA probably has that more than most other places. But of course, then we have the fact that the Canadian financial sector has also come through this crisis in pretty good form and is rebounding pretty impressively. And by and large, it tends to yield about 4%. So getting 4% on bank shares isn't something that is easy to attain in many places, particularly in North America or in Europe. But banking shares, pretty much across the board, are starting to do better. And the European banking sector has also been doing better in here. But it's all happening against a background where interest rates are going to be held lower for longer, inflationary pressures are starting to rise, and these banks are not having to pay any interest. They're, in many respects, protected from having to pay out or to offer loans at negative rates. So they're picking up really quite an attractive spread. And that's against a background where the yield curve spread is coming off of very depressed levels. If we were to see 10-year treasuries go all the way back up to 2%, that would have a very serious material effect on the ability of the government to service their debt and to pay back on the, or at least to service the interest on the debt even. Continue to think that it is more likely than not that we are moving into a period of financial repression, and that they will try to stop this yield curve from pushing all the way back up towards the 250 basis point level. But it is the natural progression of what we should anticipate. But I don't think that they're going to, in fact, do anything until there is a wobble in the stock market. And the stock market is not wobbling. The S&P 500 was pushing on to a new closing high in here today. The Nasdaq has been lagging, and we've certainly seen some evidence, at least, that there is a rotation underway, because the stay-at-home champions have done spectacularly well this year. But it's virtually impossible for these companies to grow at the same rate in 2021 as they did in 2020, as people move back into a normal environment and start to engage in normal activities and normal spending patterns. Then they're not going to be spending as much time at home surfing the web for things to buy, or they will probably start just going out and just engaging in the normal social activities we're all accustomed to. It doesn't necessarily mean that all of these technology companies are going to give up all their gains, but they're not going to grow at the same pace. Whereas there are plenty of companies that have been really aggressively sold off, and they are now just beginning to pick up again. And that's particularly true in the travel and leisure sectors, but it's also true in the retail sector and in the industrial sectors. And of course, we have the additional point that there is a great deal of money being devoted to a Green New Deal, whether that is solar or wind or green hydrogen. There is a lot of money pouring into that sector. But what's also quite apparent is that oil prices continue to rebound, and they are now pausing below the $50 area on Brent crude, and nothing on that chart says that we're not going to see additional upside from here. Copper prices are also still on a recovery trajectory, and we're up another cent in here today, but we have a little bit of a short-term overbought condition right now. When we then think about iron ore prices, well, China is obviously the biggest importer, and prices have been pausing of late, but it is still a recovery scenario overall. When we think about the wider industrial resources sector, it continues to rebound. It's coming back up towards the upper side of this range that's been forming now for 7 years. I think increasingly people are coming around to the idea that we're going to have a great deal of spending one way or another in 2021. There will obviously be some challenges in terms of the number of companies that are going to be able to persist. But right now, the high yield market is not exhibiting any kind of concern about the potential for companies to run into trouble. One of the only places in the world where we're seeing the number of defaults making headlines is China. China has decided that they are not going to bail out the rest of the world again the way they did back in 2008, but the stock market is continuing to rally here. There is obviously this problem with non-performing loans, and they do appear to be managing it. So the number of defaults this year is greater than the number of defaults last year, which is greater than the number of defaults the year before, but it's greater by about the same amount as the year before. So that's clear evidence that they are managing the number of defaults. It's not necessarily that the problem is getting bigger or smaller, but rather that they're willing to tackle it on a piecemeal basis, and the number of defaults will continue to increase over the years at a predictable pace. This is very emblematic of the way that China tends to deal with problems, that once identified and once they have decided they're going to deal with it, then it is done in a piecemeal manner until it's no longer required. That's exactly the same way that they dealt with the shadow banking sector, and now they're dealing with the non-performing loans as well. But the stock market continues to push higher. The renminbi remains really quite firm, and that's despite the fact that it is overbought in the short term. So as long as China is willing to allow the renminbi to appreciate, it is lending a clear tailwind to Asian currencies, and Asian currencies pushed on to new recovery highs in here today as well. But the other point, of course, is that we're back in a very different environment today for global stock markets than we've had for most of the last decade, because they can now appreciate as their currencies rise. And that is clearly emblematic of the willingness of international investors to buy because they want to gain exposure to both the currency and capital markets. So it is in no way hedged. And that is also clearly very much in line with what's happening in terms of the recovery in the gold price. Bitcoin prices are still hovering here around the previous all-time high. And around $19,000, it's really just a shade below the psychological $20,000. And this looks like a consolidation in the region of the peak. So nothing has really happened to question that this isn't still a bull market overall. And in fact, I think it's rather comforting that we get some consolidation in the region of a previous peak, because it, as long as the breakout above 12,000 is sustained, then it's more likely than not that we will see a break above 20,000. But I'm not really convinced by these arguments being made right now that it's a store of value for institutional investors. The volatility and also the remaining questions about the security and the custody. The fact that custody services are being offered is one thing. The resilience of those custody services, as the quantity of wealth being held under custody, that has not yet been tested. And the reality is that the bigger the target, the greater the incentive there is to try and penetrate the target. So I do think that eventually there is going to be a question about the security of these custody services. Nonetheless, I think that this still represents a bull market environment. Every other time we've had a halvening, it has bolstered the limited supply argument. We had a halvening in May, and the price is now responding to that. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.